We are in the middle of this incredible chapter 46, and we started to look at the natural human response of loving someone who loves us. If someone loves us, we love them back. I read a beautiful story of the Rebbe, where this young girl from a secular family, she was like 5 or 6 years old, was going by the Rebbe for a dollar, and she looks at the Rebbe and she says, "Lubavitcher Rebbe, I love you." And the secretaries were a little taken aback. And the Rebbe said to her, "Thank you very much." And he gave her a dollar. And then to get another dollar, and he said, "This is for your love." Aww. And it gets so much stronger when the person who loves us is greater than us. And it's even stronger when we are extremely lowly. And it's even stronger when the love that they show us is tremendous, tremendous love. Each of those things work to magnify our love and response. So the Alter Rebbe gave us an analogy. He said, look at a great and mighty king. So he's great personally. He's mighty in that he rules over so many countries. And he comes to a lowly, despicable individual who's stuck in the garbage, literally in a pile of filth. And what does he do? He personally doesn't send any messengers, comes, takes him out of the garbage, brings him into his palace, brings him into his own chamber, and shows him tremendous friendship and hugs him and kisses him. How is this man going to respond? How is he going to respond? Even if he has a heart of stone, his heart is going to melt. The Alter Rebbe says, okay, well, that applies to us. And the Alter Rebbe is now going to take these aspects of the analogy. We're going to realize that the lover is of the highest, highest, highest caliber. I mean, we all know there is no one beyond Hashem. And then we're going to look at ourselves and we're going to realize that we're pretty lowly, sadly enough. And then we're going to look at the tremendous love and realize how powerful and close Hashem shows love to us. And then how could our hearts not respond? So your booklet should be open to page 5. And the Alter Rebbe says like this. V'hine kechol hadvarim ha'ela u'kechol hachizayin hazeh v'gadol yasser ma'ayit b'chiflei chiflayim la'ein keitz asa lanu elekenu. In a manner corresponding in every detail to the said figure and image of the love shown by the mighty king, to this most lowly individual, but to a much greater degree, doubled and redoubled infinitely more than in the parable, has Hashem dealt with us. All of this is true, and to a much, much greater degree. And Rabbi Steindl asks a very simple question. Why isn't it so simple between us and Hashem? It's not that simple. Look at it. When we're talking about between human beings, we know that the mechanism works automatically. So if there's somebody that you need to fix things up with, just you feeling love in your heart towards them automatically calls forth a response. There's a great analogy given of a person who is so consumed with his business. You can't talk to him. He's so consumed with his business. What happens when you put his hand in fire? Is he still so consumed with his business, or he's suddenly paying attention to something else? Yeah, I don't care how consumed you are with business. Right now, the person is going to be paying attention to their hand that hurts. That's how it is between human beings. If you show love to another human being, it may take time, but the fact is, their heart will respond. It cannot help but respond. And yet, Hashem shows us incredible love. Why aren't we just always automatically in love with Him? We are, by the way. But why don't we feel it? Why don't we always feel that love to Him? I mean, look at the craziness that we've been through as a Jewish people and the love that's shown to Hashem, Jews of all walks of life. We can't explain it. The only way we could explain is that we all always love Hashem. But why don't we always feel it? There's two main points that he brings out. One of them is, he says, he brings from Koheles. Hashem made man straight. Asa elikim asa adam yasher. Hashem made us straight, but we become crooked. So the natural, normal response is our heart should respond, but our heart has been distorted. There's a lot going on. We become sucked into this or to that, and suddenly we're not natural anymore. Like, you know, God forbid somebody has an eating disorder, then when they have to recover, they don't, you know, naturally a kid knows how much to eat, when to eat. But as we get older, then eating becomes less of a natural process. So here our hearts are really straight, but because of the distortions of life, it doesn't respond naturally. And then he brings another insight as to why we don't just It's not that simple. I love the way he says it. Why is it not that simple between us and Hashem? And he said the vastness of distance between us, how much greater he is than us, we cannot understand it. He said, if a human being, you know, feeds a dog or takes care of an abandoned animal, the animal automatically feels gratitude towards the human being. How much more did Hashem do for us? Look at us in the desert, how he 10 plagues on the Egyptians, split the sea for us, gives us the Torah. And what are we doing the whole time? Complain, 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 complain. As if he did the greatest injustice. Why? Because we had to first come to some level of recognition of his greatness, and that took us time. We had no appreciation. He gives the parable that's brought in many Hasidic works about a peasant who saw the king and insulted him. And the king's ministers were so angry, they wanted to punish the guy. He said, no, 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 not yet. Bring him to the royal city. So they bring the guy to the royal city. They give him a haircut. They wash him. They dress him in nice clothes. And after a while, he comes to know what royalty is, who the king is. And then he remembers what he said. And suddenly, that's the greatest punishment. He's so deeply ashamed. He had no concept of who the king was before, but now he knows who the king is. So in order for us to respond, we have to have some level of appreciation of Hashem. And so the Rebbe points out that this does not take any meditation on our part. We don't have to have meditation, but what we do have to do is pay attention. When it comes to the human realm, even if we don't pay attention, it's like the hand in fire. You're gonna respond. When it comes to between us and Hashem, we do have to take the time and pay attention. Think about the fact that Hashem loves us, how great he is, how small we are, and the incredible amount of love that he has for us. And he comes to us in our space, no matter where we are. And he literally unites with us, as the Alter Rebbe is going to explain. Our heart is going to respond. Now we're going to talk about, remember the parable we were talking about, how incredibly great the king is. Now we're going to talk about Hashem's incredible, as if personal, greatness. Ki l'gdulasa ein cheker, for his greatness is beyond comprehension. This is from Ashrei. We say it every day, that sometimes it just becomes, you know, normal for us. But if we really think about the words of Ashrei, Hashem's greatness knows no bounds. The Ibn Ezra explains, kol melch bilta yesh l'gdulasa reishis v'achres v'l'gdulasa ein ekein. Any other king, his greatness has a beginning and an end. But for Hashem's greatness, it is not so. This is because Hashem's greatness has no end. And the Malbim says, "Laisaspik shum chakira lahakar gdulase mitzad asmai, v'chol she'anu maisifim lahakar b'gdulase neida shaloi neida." No investigation will be enough to recognize Hashem's greatness as it is. And the more we continue to investigate his greatness, we come to know that we don't know. So Hashem's greatness simply cannot be fathomed. V'ihu m'mali kol almin v'seviv kol almin. And he pervades all worlds and encompasses, meaning transcends all worlds. So when it comes to a human king, and we're saying how great he is, he's noble he is, he's much better intellectually, emotionally developed, much more noble than any human being you know. Doesn't matter how great he is, his greatness is limited. He's human. There's going to be some level of comparison between him and other human beings. However, when it comes to Hashem, his greatness is beyond what we could imagine. There's no level of comparison. The Alter Rebbe uses two terms over here. He says, Ihu m'mali kol almin, he fills all worlds, he pervades all worlds, which means that, and we brought this up a number of times in class, the statement from our sages in the Midrash, Ma ha-nefesh m'mala es ha-guf, ka ha-kadosh baruch hu m'mali es ha-aylam. Just as the soul fills the body, so does Hashem fill the world. And that means that Hashem gives life to each created being in a way that it relates to that life force and is suited to it. So we have a life force within us that we relate to and we feel. And that's the life that is Mamali Kol Almin, fills all worlds. This is what gives the unique nature and character to each created thing. But then it's more than that. Hashem is Soiviv Kol Almin. He surrounds all worlds. And the reason why he's called surrounding all worlds is not because he surrounds them, Chas V'Shalom, and is not present within them. Actually, this energy is the most present energy in the room. And the reason why it's called encompassing or surrounding is because it is so aloof from us. Although it brings us into existence, we cannot feel it or relate to it. So we're talking about Hashem's personal greatness. We are looking at the lover right now. Remember how tremendous he is? That's how much more our heart is going to respond. Oh, how tremendous. He fills all worlds and he encompasses all worlds. V'noida mizayar ha-kadesh v'ha-arizal, riboy ha-hechalais v'ha-ilamais ad ein misbar. And from the Holy Zohar, and also from our master, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria of blessed memory, it is known of the multitude of hechalot, these being the specific levels within each spiritual world and worlds which are infinite. So besides his personal greatness, that he fills all worlds and he encompasses all worlds, now let's look at the magnitude of his power. Remember of the human king, we were talking about he's personally great, but besides the fact that he's personally great, he also rules over an astounding number of countries and citizens. Well, look what Hashem rules over. We know from the Zohar, we know from the Arizal, the infinite amount of hechalot and worlds that there are. Ad ein misbar, there is no count to them. So what are hechalot and what are worlds? In general, this is the only physical world, right? So when we say a mansion, or we say a sanctum, or we say a chamber, we don't mean physically. The only place we mean physically is in this world. But it serves as a model for us to understand something that goes on beyond our world. What is a heichal? A heichal is a place where beings converge and connect on the background of some level of space. Now, even in our physical world, we have alternate forms of heichal that don't actually involve us getting physically together, such as Zoom. I wish everybody on Zoom was at class. But we are converging and connecting in a space that is spiritual. Now, in higher worlds, there are beings that have something in common, and that's where they interact. Now, let's differentiate between worlds and hechalot, worlds and mansions. We're going to look at the words of Rabbi Chaim Vital. This is the student of the Arizal, and he explains like this: V'chol eilam v'eilam me'abiya yesh b'chitzaynias u'pnimios v'ha'chitzaynias nikra b'shem hechalais u'medareis u'v'seichan yesh p'nimios v'hu ha'eser sefirais. These are excerpted sentences. In each of the worlds of Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiyah, there is an external aspect and an internal aspect. The external aspect is called mansions and chambers, and within each world there is an internal aspect, which is the ten sefirot. So we're saying not only is the internal aspect of the worlds endless and infinite without number. We're talking about the ten sefirot. We know that they're infinite. But even the external aspect of each world is utterly infinite. Utterly infinite. We're trying to come to recognize just the magnitude of Hashem's kingship and dominion. A human being can rule over the entire world. His kingship is limited. Let's look at what Hashem rules over. Infinite amount of worlds, infinite amount of mansions. There's no number to them. And a human king, he can rule over everything. He can control everything, but he doesn't bring life to everything. Hashem literally brings all these worlds and beings into existence, and he rules over all of them. And of the myriads, of myriads of angels which are found in each world, and heichal, countless and without end. So the worlds are infinite, the mansions are infinite, and the beings within these worlds and mansions are truly infinite. That just, like, you have to stop and think for a moment. It's very interesting because we don't have to meditate on this chapter, right? But if we do meditate, it helps. Just think about it for a minute. Just besides Hashem's personal greatness, that he's literally the one who brings everything into existence and in a way that they can't even know and imagine. And the infinite amount of what he rules over, worlds and chambers, and his infinite amount of angels. And now the altar was going to bring proof from the Talmud about Hashem's infinite angels, which is very interesting. It's just to show that it's not restricted to the world of Kabbalah, the Zohar, the writings of the Arizal. This is spelled out in the Talmud from verses of the Torah. Uchmesh kasav bagamara ksiv hayesh misbar legedudav uchsiv elef alfin yisham shune v'ribay rivivan kadamaihi. So does the Gemara note. It is written, is there any numbering his regiments of angels? Yet it is also written, 1,000 thousands minister unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stand before him. So the verse from Eiv says, Is there any number to his legions, to his troops? Which means there is no number. But then Daniel says, 1,000 thousands and 10,000 10,000s and astounding numbers like 1 million and 100 million, but it's a number. There's some level of finitude here. Definitely restricted over here. The second verse indicates that there is indeed a finite number of angels, albeit a very great number, while the rhetorical question in the first verse implies that the number is truly infinite. Umeshane elef alfin v'chulei misper gedud echad afal gedudav ein misper. The Gemara answers, 1,000 thousands is the quota of one regiment, but his regiments are innumerable. The second verse then speaks of the number of angels within one regiment, while the first verse alludes to the number of regiments, which is truly infinite. So the Gemara asks the question, well, are there an infinite number of angels, or are there not? Or is there not an infinite number of angels? And the Gemara says, yes. We said the troops are infinite. Hayesh misbar ligadudav. Is there any number to his troops? No, there's no number. They're infinite. But within each troop, there is an astounding number, astounding finite number of angels. Now, philosophically, we have a question. This is brought up in Hasidic works that you cannot, a multitude of finite things does not come up to be an infinite amount. From a certain amount, no matter how many times you're going to pile up 1 million and 1 billion and 1 billion, it's not going to reach infinity. They're just two completely different realms. So how are we saying that his number of troops is infinite, but within this number of troops, there's a finite number of angels? And the answer is, when it comes, this is what the Rebbe addresses, when it comes to us human beings, that rule applies. It's a rule of logic and it applies. When it comes to Hashem, it doesn't apply. So it makes no sense to us. We can't understand it, but that's how it works. That's how it works. He has a finite number of angels in each of these legions, a tremendous number, and the amount of legions that he has is infinite. Why are we talking about this? We're coming to realize the greatness of the one who loves us. The one who loves us, the one who comes down to us in our lowly space and shows us a tremendous amount of closeness. Now, again, we're trying not to do intellectual work here. We're trying to do emotional work. So why are we getting this description of Hashem's numbers of angels and he rules over? And that's because we have to find something that we relate to in order to bring the message home. You know, we may not appreciate the greatness of a king, but when we see him with his royal retinue of all these guards and everything, suddenly something strikes us and we feel an awe towards him. When we start looking at these numbers, just to have an emotional response, we want our heart to respond to Hashem's love for us. Well, then we're looking at this incredible amount of angels and worlds and mansions. And then something strikes a chord and says, wow, out of all of that, and Hashem chooses to love me. And the disparity between us and the angels, who are very holy and mighty and, you know, free of sin and pure, is so much more than the disparity between a regular person and this lowly, lowly person who is in the bottom of the garbage can. We are much further away from the angels than the lowly, lowly person is away from just regular, normal people. And us in our lowly state, Hashem comes to us to show us love. Now, you're going to say, one second, didn't we learn that the Jewish people is the most holiest and most important entity that there is? And that's the truth. But the reason for that is not because of our inherent greatness, it's because Hashem chose us. Once the king chose the man on the garbage can and takes him to his room and hugs him and kisses him and says, this is my best, best friend, suddenly this man is more important than any minister that the king has. But it's not because he has inherent worth. And there's a great story of a man who was converting. He was learning with the Maharal. The Maharal was actually directing his conversion. And he did a lot of study, and he was going to have to go through the bris, milah, and he was going to have to go to the mikveh. And he was perplexed. He said to the Maharal, I understand the tremendous amount of study that I have to do in order to become Jewish. And I understand that I have to have a bris milah, but why do I have to go to the mikveh? And he said, my son, that's a very good question. You'll go through the conversion process. We're going to make a su'udas mitzvah, a special mitzvah meal. We'll have a special celebration. At that celebration, I want you to come over to me, and I want you to ask me this question. And he said, okay. And that's what happens. He finished his studies. He went through the bris milah. He went to the mikveh. They made a su'udas mitzvah. And the man does not approach the Maharal. And the Maharal calls him over and he said, my son, you had a question to ask me. And he said, yeah, I don't have that question anymore. And it's like the inner transformation that takes place with us once Hashem has chosen us. Once Hashem has chosen us, we are loftier than any angel, as we're going to talk about in this chapter. But we have to remember, and this is really the paradox of being Jewish, we have to remember that our entire worth comes from Hashem. It's not like inherent worthiness. We're inherently worthy and Hashem chose us. No, inherently, we are unworthy. Human beings living in mortar and brick homes, doing very physical things, living a physical life, not inherently special. And yet, we are beyond everything, beyond the stars, beyond the galaxies, beyond the angels of the highest, highest worlds. But that's because Hashem chose us. We've gone through this transformation, and our greatness is completely dependent on Hashem. Now, coming back to looking at Hashem's greatness. So when it comes to a human king, how much greater he is than his subjects are what make him a king. The expression is, Ein melech b'lai am. There is no king without a nation. I don't care how wonderful and great you are. You don't have a nation, you're not a king. There's like to be lots of president wannabes. Sorry, the people are not behind you. You're not the president. You could call yourself the president. You can run for president. You're not the president. And even somebody who's truly, truly great, he is not a king if he doesn't have a nation. There is some type of relationship and value between the people and the king. But when it comes to creation and Hashem, creation actually has no value. And this is what we're going to look at right now. V'chulam kame k'lo mamesh chashive uvetelim b'metzius mamesh. Yet before him, all of them are accounted as nothing at all and are nullified in their very existence. Everything is like it doesn't exist. Kibitol dibor echad mamesh legabe mahus hanefesh hamedaberes ve'atzmusa. Just as one word is truly nullified in relation to the being of the articulate soul, the soul that possesses the power of speech, and its essence. So this is a concept that we visited in chapters 20 and 21 earlier in Tanya. We're looking at creation. What is creation? Creation is but the word of Hashem. David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, "Bidvar Hashem shemayim na'asu." By the word of Hashem, the heavens were created. We learn in Perkei Aves, "Ba'asara ma'amares nivra ha'olam." The world was created by 10 utterances. So what is creation? Creation is simply a word. Now, of course, Hashem is not physical and his words are not our words. We have to look and see what is a human word and come to understand what is this word that Hashem has spoke that is creation. Well, what is speaking? Speaking is a very external power of the soul. Speaking is expressing thoughts to someone outside of yourself. It recognizes a being outside of the essential self. Creation is Hashem contracting himself and giving importance, as it were, to something outside of himself. It's a very constricted divine level that allows for beings to think that they're separate and is very external to who Hashem is. So that's creation. Creation is simply a word. Now let's look at the importance of a single word in the human experience compared to our articulate soul. Our articulate soul, the human articulate soul, can speak infinite amount of words. The reason why it doesn't speak infinite amount of words is because it's in a human body and it can only speak as long as the person is alive. But theoretically speaking, this soul is able to say words forever. So you're going to take one word and compare it to a soul that can speak an infinite amount of words. What value does the one word have in face of infinity? It has no value. This one word, when you're comparing it to the infinite amount of words which can be uttered by the articulate soul, you realize the word has no value, no value at all. Wait, it has a little bit of value because the articulate soul speaks. So maybe this is an infinite amount of words, and this is one word, but it's about words. Okay, so let's move up a little bit higher in the soul. Let's look at thought. Thought is a much more internal process, which it does not recognize something outside of the self. It's for the person themselves. You think for yourself. And in fact, thought is what gives life to speech. You cannot speak without thinking first, even though some people try to prove otherwise, but it's impossible to actually speak without thinking first. And even if a person is saying words and not thinking about those words, he couldn't have said those words unless he thought about them the first time he said them. And I'll give you an example, and we don't feel comfortable with this example, but it's like praying and thinking about something else at the same time. How do you do that? You're praying, you're saying words, and you're not thinking. How is that working? Because the first time you said those words, you had to think. You had to look in the siddur, get those words down underway, and once you have invested thought into those words, now they become, you know, something that you have in your repertoire, and they can come out even without new thought. But the fact is, a word in the presence of the thought that creates it doesn't exist. It has no existence. If in that world of thought, the word has no value. I'll say one second. That's true when you're going to say word in presence of articulate soul versus word in presence of thought, then I get it. Thought is a much higher essence than the word. But if you think about it carefully, both speech and thought is made up of letters. In order to think, we must employ language. So yes, it's a much higher realm, but both words and thought are composed of language. So a word may have some level of value in the word world of thought. But now we're going to take it up to a completely different space. Yes, you speak in a language, and yes, you think in a language, but let me ask you, do you understand in a language? Do you love in a language? Our intellect and our emotions are prelingual. They are beyond words. When you understand, your soul understands. It's not about a language understanding. It's truly your soul that understands. When you feel an emotion, your soul feels that emotion. You're loving someone or you're feeling something, and that's prelingual. It's like that universal feeling of hunger. It's not something that's lingual. It's just something that people feel. This is a place where words don't exist. And yet, we're going to have to say that words exist even in the intellect and the emotion of the soul, which we call the essence of the soul, even though it's not truly the essence of the soul, but the soul so deeply identifies with intellect and emotion that for practical purposes, we call it the essence of the soul. Words must be there because that intellect and those emotions are what generate the words. So they're there, but even though they're there, they actually don't exist. Another example that the Alter Rebbe gives in Tanya is the light of the sun within the body of the sun. The sun's rays are so powerful here on earth. Could you imagine how powerful they are within the actual body of the sun? And yet, if you look at the sun, you don't see rays. They just don't exist. So are they there? Yes, they're there, and even more powerfully than they are here on earth, but they have no existence. Okay? So we're looking at this one word that has no value compared to the articulate soul, no value compared to the thought, and absolutely no value compared to intellect and emotion. But when it comes to us human beings, it wouldn't be correct for us to say that a word has no value. Once the word leaves us, the word has value. And not just that, sometimes you can say something and be struck by the brilliance of what you just said. Meaning, there's something in those words that you didn't intend, and when you hear those words, it comes back to you from the words. So there's something that the words could even give to you. That's in the human experience. In the human experience, once the speech leaves us, it takes on a separate existence. And even if we're going to say, well, yes, it left us, but let's compare it to thought. It has no value. Well, it has some value because it exists in a world of its own. But when it comes to Hashem, it's completely different. The Zohar tells us, Leis asar panoi mine. There is no space devoid of him. So yes, he has created the worlds, and yes, he has spoken, but his word never left him. It's like that word that is not only inside the articulate soul, and not only inside thought, but actually in the essence of the soul. Does it exist? It has no existence. That is creation. So we're looking at this human king who has tremendous power over many, many countries, but they are what make him a king. Now we're looking at Hashem, who has tremendous power over infinite amount of worlds, an infinite amount of angels, an infinite amount of sanctums, but yet these don't create his greatness. And not just that, these don't even exist. They actually have no value. All of this helps us realize the tremendousness of the one who loves us. If you just think about it for a minute, how absolutely great is Hashem? Our mind cannot fathom his greatness. Our mind cannot get it. And yet, he individually loves each one of us. And not just a little bit of love. He loves us tremendously. And he wants us to be close to him. And he literally gives us himself. Just as one word is truly unified in relation to the being of the articulate soul and the soul and its essence, while the speech of the soul was still present in the soul's faculty of thought or the will and desire of the heart, as has been explained at length. In chapters 20 and 21, the Alter Rebbe explained at length how a single utterance is absolutely as nothing when compared to the infinite capacity of the articulate soul. This is so even when the word has already been uttered and thereby become a distinct entity. Even more so in the case when the person's speech is in potentia, in the person's thought or heart's desire, which are the sources of speech, since a person thinks before he speaks and speaks about the things that he desires. In such an instance, the single word is totally nullified in its source and is not at all perceptible as an entity separate from it. So too with the divine speech that creates and animates angels, the various worlds, and all creatures. Divine speech is always absolutely united with its source and is therefore always in a state of total nullification to it. Okay, so remember we said we were wanting to explore the three aspects that bring our heart to respond. We wanted to explore the greatness of the lover. Well, we just did tiny, 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 minuscule amount to explore the greatness of Hashem. When we realize how great he is, our heart will respond, cannot help but respond in tremendous love back. And now we're going to look at the beloved and the tremendous amount of love that he shows us. All these angels ask, where is the place of his glory? And the answer, the whole physical earth is full of his glory. That is, meaning how is this world filled with his glory? Because of his people, Israel. So there is a famous commentator on davening, the Avud Raham. And on these words from davening, he writes, Ayei Mekayim Kvaydei, they're asking, where is the place of his glory? The Avud Raham writes, She'af meha malachim hu ne'alam. He is concealed even from the angels. We think of the angels, they're mighty, powerful, spiritual beings. They are. But you know what kind of relationship they have with Hashem? Very superficial. They know nothing of his essence. And they want to know, where is his essence? They're asking each other, Ayei Mekayim Kvaydei, where is the place of his glory? And they say, oh, on earth, with the Jewish people. They are the only one who know him in his essence. Could you imagine the love that Hashem shows us? The angels don't have that kind of relationship with him. Who has that relationship with him? Us. The Alter Rebbe writes in a Hasidic discourse, talking about these words, kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. You know, the angels are saying, holy, holy, holy. He says, this is why the angels say holy. The whole world, earth is filled with his glory because in their case, he truly is kadosh. Kadosh means holy, but it means separate and apart and ultimately lofty and exalted. Since the beginning of time. However, the whole earth below specifically is filled with his glory. Is that incredible that Hashem's essence is here with us, the Jewish people? We just explored how great he is. Nobody knows him in his essence, but where does he place his essence? Where does he cause his essence to reside? With us, the Jewish people. It's incredible. You just can't. For the Holy One, blessed be he, forsook the higher and lower creatures that are not the ultimate purpose of his creation, choosing none of them but Israel, his people. He literally, he disregards them all. He makes these holy, holy angels. He makes infinite amount of worlds. We can't count them. You know, we think of our universe that is infinite. We think of it as infinite. You know, you look at the galaxies and the stars. This physical world is nothing compared to the amount, the infinite amount of spiritual worlds. It's like a tiny little speck compared to the worlds that exist. We're thinking, Hashem, in his greatness, where does he choose his essence to reside? With us, with the Jewish people. Hashem literally disregards it all. He leaves it all aside, and he chooses to be with us. Now, let's look at the analogy again. So we looked at this great king. We looked at the simple, lowly commoner. And where is he? He's in the garbage can. So too, in the object of the analogy, Hashem takes us out of where? The lowest place on planet Earth. Whom he brought out of Egypt, the obscenity of the earth, the place of filth and impurity. Like the lowly and disgraceful individual who was raised from the dunghill by the king in person, the children of Israel were brought forth out of Egypt by the king himself. So where does Hashem come to get us from? The garbage can. Mitzrayim is called Ervas Haaretz. You know, this that whole interaction with Yehuda and Yosef. You know, they don't know that Joseph is their brother. And he's accusing them of being spies. And he says, L'ra'is es Ervas Haaretz basem. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. And Rashi explains, what does that mean? Ervas Haaretz, the nakedness of the land. And it says, Gilui Haaretz. Mehechan hi neicha li kavesh. The exposure of the land. Where is it most easily conquered from? So in general, in this context, Erva over here means exposure. But the Midrash says that this actually signifies a level of filth and impurity. The Midrash says that a human being has Bisar Erva, flesh of nakedness, and the world has a place that is nakedness. And where is that? That is Egypt. Egypt was the most lowly, filthy place on planet Earth, besides the amount of idol worship that was going on, the immorality that was going on, but actually the spiritual source of Egypt was the most degenerate. We'll look at the words from Rabbi Chaim Vital in Shahar HaMitzvahs. And he says, Noida ki eretz Mitzrayim temeya mikol artetz chutz la'aretz v'nikreis ervas ha'aretz. It is known that the land of Egypt is more impure than all the countries of the world, meaning outside of the land, literally outside of the land of Israel, and is called the nakedness of the land. And the Al-Sheikh talks about the filth and impurity of the minister, the spiritual minister of Egypt. The Al-Sheikh writes, Bechinas tumas sar Mitzrayim, hi hayaisa akura umizuhemes mikol yasar tumais asher al rashi kol yasar amim. Ki al-kei nikris Mitzrayim ervas haaretz, ki hi bechina hayaisar mizuhemes shebaguf. The impurity of Egypt's ministering angel is characterized by being the darkest and most degenerate form of impurity, more so than all the other kinds of impurity which characterize the ministering angels of all other nations. It is for this reason that Egypt is called the nakedness of the land, because it represents the most unclean aspect of the body. So where did Hashem come to get us from? He comes to get us from Egypt. What's Egypt? The most immoral, disgusting place on planet Earth. Now, the fact that it's immoral and there's idol worship there, you can compare that to the fact that the garbage can is very filthy. But what's more offensive to the king? A gross, disgusting garbage can, or a place where people rebel against him? A place where people rebel against him is even more lowly and filthy to him than just the physical filth. And that's what Egypt is. It wasn't just, you know, the immorality of the people, which was disgusting enough, but it was the fact that the spiritual source of Egypt was the most impure. The ministering angel of Egypt is the most impure. It was the most concentrated, degenerate form of klipa, spiritual klipa. And that's where Hashem got us out from. And we're saying got us out, but it's not just something of the past. Next chapter, 47, which is maybe the smallest chapter in the Tanya, but as potent as you can imagine, we're going to see that Hashem takes each of us out of Mitzrayim every single day. This is an ongoing process. It wasn't like, you know, one time he came to our people, took us out of the most disgusting place on planet Earth. No, every single moment, every single day, Hashem comes to each of us in a place that is most lowly, with tremendous love. He himself and comes and takes us out of there. This is a continuous process that's happening to us personally all the time. Lay al yaday malach, v'lay al yaday chulei, ela hakadosh baruch hu, b'chvaydei uva'atma yared l'sham. Not through an angel, which is a created being whose abode is in the world of Bereah, Yetzir, or Asiya, nor through a messenger from the level of the world of Atzilus, but the Holy One, blessed be He Himself, in His glory, descended there. This is like the words that we say from the Haggadah. What do we say in the Haggadah? We say, Lay al yedei malach, v'lay al yedei saraf, v'lay al yedei shaliach, ela hakadosh baruch hu b'chvaydei uva'atmai. Not by the medium of an angel, nor by the medium of a saraf, nor by the medium of any agent, rather it was the Holy One, blessed be He Himself in His glory. He didn't send us any messengers. He personally, in His essence, came and does come to take us out of Egypt, to take us out of the most filthy, disgusting place. Doesn't that speak to us? Doesn't that show us of His love? The most tremendous lover that we can ever imagine comes to us, lowly people, in a place of filth and impurity. He doesn't send messengers. He Himself comes to take us out. And the previous Rebbe points out that this isn't just spiritually. Physically, all the time, Hashem is there with us. And I have to read you His words. He said, everybody should contemplate on this. He says, meditate upon Hashem's greatness, incredible kindness to us. B'gaydol nifla'aysa v'chasadav harabim v'ha'atsumim Hanisim v'hanifla'ais. We have to meditate upon the magnitude of His many and vast miracles and graces, the miracles and the wonders. Hanisim klalim v'hanisim pratim, both general miracles and specific miracles. B'chol echad v'echad, b'vani chayi umezayna uv'hatzala. That Hashem does for each and every one of us with regards to children and livelihood and salvation. All of which evokes a great awakening within our soul. To marvel in wonder about godliness. And I want everybody to close their eyes for a minute. And just tell me, is there a single person in this room who could not say that Hashem has done tremendous miracles for them? Each of us, we can look in our lives and we gasp at thinking about what He has done for us. Spiritually, physically, in every aspect of our life, everybody for sure had a miracle. I can guarantee that everybody had a miracle. You think about it, you know what that is? That is Hashem, who loves you incredibly. He was the greatest essence and being. He loves you personally. He wants to be there for you. He wants complete closeness and union with you. And He comes to you, whichever place that you are. It could be the lowest place on planet Earth, physically, and even more so spiritually. How beneath His dignity, but He does it. Why? Because He loves us. Think about that. You can't help but just be in love with Hashem. How can we not be in love with Hashem? He loves us. Our heart must respond. And the altar was going to tell us that this kind of closeness that Hashem shows us when He takes us out of the garbage can, it wasn't just to take us out of the garbage can, it's because He wants to become extremely close to us. Just like the king took this guy out of the garbage can, it's because He wanted to share an incredible level of friendship with us. And that's what the Torah says that Hashem told Moshe, "V'hayitziyacha es ha'ami Mitzrayim, ta'avdun es ha'alikim ha'har hazeh." You will serve God on this mountain. The reason why He took us out of there is to show us incredible closeness. The Alter Rebbe is going to describe coming up, and we'll talk about this next class, Bezrat Hashem, the kisses and the hugs that Hashem gives us in the act of Torah and Mitzvot. It is mind-boggling, the union that we share with Hashem when we study Torah and we fulfill His Mitzvot. So let's summarize what we said in class until now. And that is, we look at the analogy of the great and mighty king who comes to a man in the garbage can and takes him out and brings him to his palace and shares tremendous closeness with him. Well, that's us. This is exactly what Hashem did for us. Let's first look at how great He is. There's no way we can fathom His greatness. He fills all worlds. He surrounds all worlds. The magnitude of what He rules over is incredible. Infinite amount of worlds, mansions, and angels. And yet all those things actually have no existence or value next to Him. Can we imagine the magnitude of His greatness? So that's who loves us. That's how great the one who loves us. And then who does he love? The angels are great and we're lowly. And yet they're asking each other, where is his essence? And they say, oh, the answer is on earth. Because who did Hashem choose? He chose the Jewish people. He disregarded the higher worlds, the lower worlds, the beings within them. Who does he choose to be with, essence to essence? The Jewish people. And where did he come to take us out from? The lowliest place on planet Earth, Egypt. Physically, it was the lowliest. Spiritually, it was the lowliest. And it wasn't that he sent a messenger, but he himself, in his essence, has taken us out of Egypt. And why? Because he wants to share incredible closeness and union with us in giving us Torah and mitzvahs. And that's what we're going to talk about next class with Rosh Hashem.